This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
The union that represents workers at Fred Meyer, they want you to boycott their stores in Southwest Washington and Oregon. According to King 5, UFCW Local 555, the Retail Grocery Workers Union, they said employees at the stores are working without a contract and they are ready to strike, but they don't necessarily want to. They don't want to. They want their contract issues to be figured out. I would argue these are the exact type of jobs that probably should not be covered at all by a contract because they are literally one of the least skilled jobs out there. Most people out there without any education or skills whatsoever can do the work that these folks are doing. It doesn't mean that the work you're doing is not hard or even valued. It simply means you don't really need a whole bunch of skills to be able to check out at a grocery stand or to stock shelves. And if you don't believe me, why don't you go to an Amazon Go grocery store and you'll see exactly how your job is going to be gone soon anyway. So in their call for a boycott, the union said Fred Meyer and Kroger has, quote, continually refused to respond to reasonable pleas to fix gross inequality in pay and thereafter committed unfair labor practices to coerce employees to settle for less. And of course, by boycotting these stores, you make it easier for them to justify firing some of these employees that they believe are already being coerced. For more than 15 months, the union has been trying to negotiate better pay. It's not going their way. Kelly McAllister is the union's communications director, and she tells King 5 that the union members were trying to not get bullied by these store managers.
They were calling members into these one-on-one meetings called captive audience meetings and harassing them, telling them they were worthless, telling them they could be replaced by someone off the street, trying to coerce them to leave.
So just real quick, that last part is true. At least, not that they did that, but their job could be replaced by literally anyone who's walking on the street.
Leave the union, just a bunch of scare tactics and intimidation tactics. I think what happened was that two-tiered wage schedule just sort of stayed in place for a while. And then what we have, the reason that we think we're seeing women being pushed into those Schedule B jobs is just a long-term perception, sort of the collective unconscious of what constitutes women's work versus men's work. And that's just not
social
true
justice
anymore. And the reason that we've never brought it up before is we never had documentation until this contract cycle.
Now, the Fred Meyer spokesperson tells KGW TV, his name is Jeffrey Temple, yeah, there's nothing what she just said is true, and it's completely misleading.
We don't funnel people into certain job types based on their gender. Rather, we encourage all applicants to apply for jobs that appeal best to them and their lifestyle, so they'll hopefully love their work and stay with the company.
No one loves their work when they work at a grocery store for the most part. Okay, so if they did anything illegal, they should be punished. But I'm not going to side with the workers calling for a boycott. That's absolutely ridiculous, and it ends up hurting them more than it hurts the company. Understand your role in the workforce, and I think that, and this is just for anybody, understand the role you play or the role your department plays, the role that your title plays in the overall scheme of the company you work for, and you will be much happier. If there's someone out there who works specifically as a grocer, I do not mean to dismiss the work that you do. I have no doubt that people who are listening to me right now who work at Kroger or Safeway or Fred Meyer or wherever, I believe that you work your tail off. I totally believe that. You have to understand that in the grand scheme of things, you're probably one of the least important cogs in that wheel. If you, for example, are a grocer, if you're the one checking out customers, your job is already being replaced with technology. So as you're fighting to get higher wages, what exactly are you doing to fight against the technology that's coming, that's already here, that's already taking your jobs? That was the big criticism I had of the $15 now movement. Congratulations, you got $15. You also made it that much easier for you to be replaced because there's technology right now that's being used at your grocery store, the self-checkout kiosk that replaced 10 people. So instead of having 10 cashiers, you now have one that's supervising. What are you doing to get yourself the skills and education necessary to survive in the workforce once the technology is here and more widespread? Some of you have no answer to that whatsoever, or the answer is Nothing. But you got your $15 an hour now. Yeah, well, if that $15 an hour goes to zero because you've been replaced, you failed yourself in this. Because if I were you, I would be working my tails off to make sure that when that shift comes, when the technology is here and cheap enough to replace you, that you are in a better position to recover. And for so many, because they rely on the unions, and the unions, they have two strategies here. Number one, get you paid more so they can get better dues from you. And number two, fight the technology, prevent it from getting there. They're going to lose that second battle. They might win that first one. They're 100% going to lose that second battle. And as a result, a lot of people who are members of unions in stores like this, in industries like this, you're going to get screwed. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
I mean, I suppose, speaking of screwed, Cairo 7 just uncovered dozens of violent assaults on board King County Metro buses. This is 3 years after King County promised to make it a little bit more safe for these drivers. They've invested millions and millions and millions of dollars in surveillance cameras. Right now, about 91% of the buses have the capability to video and audio record anything that happens on these buses. KC Metro, in my view, is directly responsible for what Cairo 7 was able to find out, including this interaction. Getting violent.
You better get the. Get
I wonder what she's saying with the bleep.
Stupid. I'm on stop.
She wasn't calling the guy a jerk, right? It was worse.
I thought they were talking about dinner.
Right? I did too. Like, you made me a steak. I wanted hot dogs. Which is a weird complaint. I would go with the steak 100% of the time. King County Metro is directly responsible for everything that you hear and everything you're going to see at that Cairo 7 piece tonight. Everything that happens is their responsibility because they have set a standard of letting virtually anyone on a bus without payment, without any respect whatsoever for the rules, without any respect whatsoever for the service, and those people end up feeling entitled. That woman that you just heard there felt entitled to the ride that she wanted in the way that she wanted. She didn't want to follow any of the rules. Because God forbid a bus driver actually pushed back just a little bit, even in the smallest amount. This is what happens. They end up getting assaulted. Now, drivers say they're frustrated because they feel like there's a lack of consequences for attacks on drivers, and they're 100% correct. There's no consequence for this kind of behavior. And again, not the cops' fault. Cops would love to arrest people like this. Cops would love to put people like this in prison. But we have a system in King County, and in Seattle specifically, that doesn't like to punish these acts of violence. They hate it. They don't want to do it. They want to stay as far away from that as humanly possible because social justice. As if social justice truly has anything to do with this. And as a result, you've got a whole bunch of bus drivers who do one of two things. Some of them actually care and they want to change things. They'll tell the woman or the dude who's trying to get on the bus who doesn't want to pay. They'll tell them, no. Now, it turns out that's against policy. You're supposed to just let them on after they say no, because they don't want to have any sort of fight like this. But the people who care about their bus, the people who care about the people on that bus who don't want to have to deal with the crazy person, who's clearly crazy, who shouldn't be on that bus driver fights back. They lose 100% of the time. And then number two happens. The bus driver who just doesn't care. The one who says nothing when the crazy person wants to get on the bus. Just get on. And then what is happening on these buses? People like me, who actually take the bus, had to deal with the crazy people. What, about a month ago? I love my friends on the bus. Dude was just passed out. He wakes up out of his stupor. He pulls out a joint. He lights the joint, takes two puffs, and then passes the hell out right afterwards. And it's just, it makes for a funny, fine ride. Okay, I'll give you that. And it provided really good detail video on my Instagram story. But beyond that, it is kind of a hassle. And I don't want to smell this dude's weed that was very, as the kids say, dank. Is that what the kids still say?
Yeah, they're still saying
okay,
that.
Okay, that's what the thing was. I don't want to have to deal with that. And I certainly don't want to have to deal with the crazy people who are loud, who seem like they're going to get violent because of the way that they're acting on the bus. Because you have a bunch of bus drivers who don't care enough to enforce some of the very basic rules of use of the King County Metro. Some dude puked up chicken teriyaki on the back of a bus, and it was just there.
My goodness.
It was just there. I took that bus from South Lake Union to CenturyLink. It was just, no one said a thing. It was just there on the back of the bus.
Have you had chicken teriyaki since then?
No. Rice is too carby.
Sounds kind of good right now.
Well, not after the image of my head. I'll never be able to eat. Although, weirdly, not to freak people out, it does kind of look the way that you would see it before eating it.
Ah, the before and after is the
same? Yeah, it was kind of similar. Maybe they just spilled it. Although, the smell was a little... 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. Did you know? Since I just gave you a plug, you should know it. You can follow me on Instagram. Fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz. It's one word, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Give me a follow. You get to go behind the scenes, not just of the show, but when I go on a bus and some dude is lighting up a joint and then passes out, I take very discreet and not so discreet video of him. What can I say? There's a lot that you can witness and experience via me on Instagram under Jason Rantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So a little bit of a shocker yesterday. A lot of people expected that the Seahawks taking on the Saints, even without Drew Brees, wasn't going to be easy. But come on, you're playing at CenturyLink. You've got Russell Wilson. You've got an O-line that hopefully learned their lesson. But in somewhat of an upset, they end up losing. Here's producer Peyton with his take.
The Seahawks fall to 2-1 on the season as Chris Carson and the gang were unable to get their footing against the New Orleans Saints on Sunday.
He gets this one away, and it's a high, somewhat short kick. Running up on it at midfield, making two men miss, and straight upfield, and he's gone. Deontay Harris is going to take it to the house. A short kick by Michael Dixon, and Harris runs right past the Seahawks coverage team. A 54-yard return, and the Saints, just like that.
The Seahawks struggled on every side of the ball that you could imagine, offense, defense, special teams. The Saints just brought an extra gear to Seattle that no one was ready for. No Drew Brees, no problem for the New Orleans Saints. Teddy Bridgewater leads the Saints to his first win in the black and the gold, throwing for 177 yards, two touchdowns, and no turnovers from the quarterback out of Louisville. Let's send it over to Coach Carroll.
So many things happened in this game that we just hurt ourselves. Even the coach got hurt in this one. We made mistakes and the errors, the big plays, the returns, and the mistake in the kicking game that gives them another chance for another touchdown that's like a turnover. We just had a really hard time getting out of our own way. Sometimes the game goes like that and you just can't get out of your own way. You make the mistakes that cause the problems and you're trying to recover, and we just didn't get it done.
The Hawks try and bounce back next week against the struggling Arizona Cardinals under new head coach Cliff Kingsbury and rookie quarterback Kyler Murray. So we'll see if the Seahawks offense, defense, and special teams is able to show up on the road trip to the desert. This is the 2-Minute Drill on the Jason Rantz Show with producer Peyton.
Hey, that's producer Peyton's second feature, the 2-Minute Drill.
Yeah, 2-Minute Drill.
You got one. That was 96 seconds.
It was close. You know, sometimes...
I mean, you've got...
Sometimes in the NFL, and I'm going to use this time right now, sometimes in the NFL, you go out and you game plan a 2-minute drill, mm-hmm. and then you score faster than two... It's never exactly...
Oh, you thought you scored faster than 2 minutes?
Yeah.
In that?
Sure.
How about this? Let us let the audience decide.
Do it.
How did Peyton do on his second ever... It's not quite as sexy as the first ever. Second ever feature, which we're going to do every Monday after a game. Where producer Peyton will give us a nice little rundown of the sports ball, because I don't know what the hell it is I'm talking about. Text us, 1-800-465-8770. What did you think of producer Peyton? Give him his constructive criticism, because God knows I do.
Oh, rip me apart.
Oh my God, he cried the other day. It was just embarrassing. I mean, he's only been here like 5-6 weeks. Already I'm making him cry. Text us, 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The environment.
So today was Shutdown DC. It was a series of protests. It was part of one big protest, but it happened all across Washington, DC. I didn't really know it was going to happen today, but apparently in DC it was well promoted. About 1,000 or so people showed up, according to Julio Rosas from the Washington Examiner. He was on the show at 4:15 to talk us through what it is he saw. And I gotta love Julio's Twitter feed, because boy, did I just live vicariously through him. Because he goes to all of these things, whether we're talking about D.C. or even in Portland. He was at that Antifa Proud Boys rally last month. He seems to find himself in the perfect position to to sort of explore the insanity of the people who showed up. So the folks today, they did a whole bunch of stupid things to get attention to their cause, none of which actually change anything. There's no one who saw a dude in Daisy Dukes doing his little twerking routine while people were throwing confetti at him. No one saw that and said, you know what? Actually, I'm on your side on global climate change now. I'm going to get rid of my love of capitalism. I'm going to embrace socialism, which is really what this was about. One of the best moments, I thought, for me was a protester who was near tears explaining that because of climate change, he refuses to have children.
My conscience couldn't handle the idea of bringing someone into a dying world.
They're snapping.
But I have hope.
There's hope.
I still think I could be a father one day.
Well.
But only if we act. Are we going to act?
Yeah.
No. I mean, yes.
Are we going to act?
Yeah. No. It is rather interesting, because to ask that question, should I be a father? You better know what the audience is going to say. Now, when you phrase it along with, by fighting climate change, you're going to hopefully get the yays. But there's got to have been someone, there had to have been someone there who was all like, well, I mean, I'm with you on the climate change stuff, but you don't seem like you'd make for a very good father.
Yeah, this guy realizes it takes two people to make a child, right?
Well, he could adopt.
He could, but
although that kid's already in the world.
Yeah, so he's not bringing a child into this world that way.
I mean, there is something funny about these people. And look, I don't mean necessarily to dismiss the passion. In a lot of ways, I can certainly appreciate people who disagree with me or I disagree with them still being passionate about something. Good for them. I mean, you found something to attack, right? You've seen a problem. This is what you want to attack it with. So I can appreciate that. But this is the kind of stuff that just drives me nuts, because you're not really making it about the issue. You're making it about yourself. So no longer is it about climate change. Now it's about you not feeling comfortable to have kids. So you don't really care about climate change. You just showed up because you want people to say, oh, you're such a good person for choosing to be selfless and not bringing another human being into a world that's already dealing not just with overpopulation, but near mass extinction. That girl, Greta Thunberg or whatever, looks like she. I'm going to be honest. There's something very scary about Danish children. Scandinavian adults as well. Just Scandinavian anything. They're just scary looking. And she was freaking me out because she spoke to the UN today and she gave a speech in which she was almost near tears, but it almost sounded like she was angry, like she was willing people to die in front of her. And people were clapping and she was all like, don't you clap for me. It was very weird. And I'm terrified. Do I have time? Oh, I have time for one more. Just real quick, because you pulled this audio. Some dude brought a boat to block the traffic in D.C., and I think he was trying. See, he's doing something. Do you know what Zugma is?
No.
It is a literary device. It's a literary device that you're just about to hear in real time.
After the natural treasure that we're losing every single day, and also because it's a huge barrier!
Oh, play on words. See what he did there?
I see that.
Just give me a few minutes. We'll get some music going. Feel free to keep chanting.
I like that because he was expecting that to end with music, but it didn't happen. So Zugma is like when you use one word to mean two different things. Usually you do it at the same time. He broke my heart and my car like that. So broke meaning two. That's what he just did.
That was great, honestly, where he just pauses and he says, oh, yeah, just hang tight. We're going to get some music going in a few seconds.
Like, that was his power out, and it just did not go according to plan. There's so much video and photos of what happened today on Twitter. I retweeted Julio Rosas and his tweet. What do we call it? Series of tweets, whatever. It's a series of tweets. Whatever the thing is called. His tweet thread. And it's got so much crazy. Like, legitimately so much crazy, you're not going to want to miss it. Go ahead and text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my Twitter feed. Just click on it. You'll find it. Or just, of course, search Jason Rantz on Twitter. Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. I usually get all of my rundowns on how well the Republican Party is doing here in Washington State via Danny Westneed of the Seattle Times, because he really has the pulse of what's going on. I'm kidding, of course. He writes a ridiculous piece in the Seattle Times, and unfortunately, the Washington State GOP wasn't allowed to publish a rebuttal. Joining me on the line with more is Caleb Heimlich. He is the Washington State Republican Party chairman, the pride of Puyallup. Caleb, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, Jason, thanks for having me.
Of course. So I make fun of it because no one goes to Danny Westneat for anything concerning the Republican Party here. But he basically had a story that claimed the Republicans here are in bad shape because, according to a new poll, basically a lot of people don't want to sort of recognize themselves, identify themselves as Republicans. What say you?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, as you pointed out, we reached out to the Times, we wrote an op-ed, but they chose not to publish that, which we felt was really unfair because Danny Westneat wrote his column basically attacking the party, attacking our event that you were the MC at, attacking our keynote speaker, and they didn't even bother calling us and giving us a chance to respond. So we drafted a response, and we think in the interest of journalistic fairness, that response would get aired. It wasn't. So people can find that and read that at WSRP.org. There's a piece called "The Washington State Republican Party is Thriving." But the bottom line to respond to Danny is, number one, we're not that concerned about a poll 14 months ahead of an election. I mean, ultimately, we're more concerned with when people go to vote. Do they vote for our candidates or not? And so whether they're willing to tell a pollster 14 months ahead of the election whether they consider themselves Republicans or Democrats is really pretty much irrelevant. The question it comes down to is, what's their philosophy on government? What do they want the state government to be doing? What do they want the state government not to be doing? And who best represents their values? And that's the case that we're out making to voters every single day, and that Republicans across the state, and this is what we pointed out in our piece, are doing that work, as you've highlighted on your show, whether it's in Marysville with the mayor John Nearing and the great things they're doing on homelessness, or what different legislators are doing on advancing the cause that matters to the voters of our state, or what Bruce Stammeyer is doing as the Pierce County executive. Every day, Republicans are making a difference for the people of Washington State, and Danny Westneat completely ignored that. And then the Seattle Times chose not to print our response that highlighted that.
Well, that's the interesting part, because I see legislators, I feel like I see them publish op-eds in the Seattle Times with some level of frequency.
Yeah, which is good, and that's fair. So, I mean, in some cases, the Seattle Times actually does give conservatives a voice. We were just frustrated in this case they didn't, and so we were calling them out for that. I'm not sure exactly why that was. But ultimately, it is true. They have published op-eds from Luann Van Werven or other state representatives, so we do appreciate at least at some level that. But in this case, there was a columnist, Danny Westneat, who is incredibly biased himself, doesn't bother doing any research, doesn't bother picking up the phone and giving us an opportunity to respond, and then the Times chose not to print our response. So now we're trying to get that message out and really highlight what Republicans are doing at every level of government and what we at the state Republican Party are doing to try and get people elected. And that's ultimately what our role is.
In fairness to Danny, I will say this, and I think you'll acknowledge this, that, you know, when you're running a race in, say, King County, there is a Trump effect. And there's really no way around that. But there's always been a little bit of an uphill battle in King County for Republicans, right?
Yes, I mean, certainly King County has always been a challenge for Republicans, and that's part of it, is we don't need to win King County. I mean, there's a lot of other voters in the state. The old adage always had been from the days of Slade Gordon back in when he was the senator during the 90s, that if you could get 40 or 41% in King, you can pick up the votes in Pierce and Snohomish and east of the mountains to offset, and you can win statewide. In terms of the Trump effect, I mean, obviously, as we've seen historically, there is headwinds in politics. I mean, whichever party controls the White House, when President Obama was president, Democrats lost 900 seats across the country in those 8 years as Republicans were winning at every level, whether it was Congress or state legislators. So certainly 2018, we saw that. And now as we head into 2020, it's our job to highlight the positive things that have come about because of the Trump presidency. We have a record-breaking economy. The average household, I heard this actually today from Steve Moore, but the average household in America has over $4,000 more in personal income than they did when President Trump was elected. That's a lot of real money to real hardworking families across this country, and we've got to highlight that that economic growth, that boon that's been caused by the tax cuts, by President Trump's efforts to deregulate the economy, his belief in American innovation and in our companies and in business has really inspired this economic boom. And we don't want that to go away by electing Elizabeth Warren or some other socialist that's going to put shackles back on our economy and lead us back into a recession and take all that growth away.
Caleb Heimlich is the Washington State GOP chairman. We're talking about a rather dire piece in the Seattle Times a couple weeks ago suggesting that the Republicans here are in tough shape going into the upcoming election. For you, when you see the different, the different positions that are open on the ballot, is there anything that you're looking towards in 2020 that should be an easier pickup than not for the Republican Party?
Certainly our focus, I mean, it all starts at the top of the ticket, having a sharp contrast to Governor Inslee. I mean, the governorship is our main goal. We haven't elected a Republican governor in my lifetime, and I do think Governor Inslee is uniquely vulnerable, as we've talked about many times. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, we're very focused on the attorney general's race. Bob Ferguson has been a really horrible and awful attorney general. He sued the president and his administration 50 times. He hasn't done anything to clean up our streets in Seattle or King County, or for that matter, many other cities across the state where the attorney general, whose job is to enforce the laws, he's been AWOL and hasn't shown any leadership on that. Instead, he's been a really partisan in an office that's supposed to be nonpartisan, or at least more so. It's supposed to be about enforcing the law. Instead, he's been playing partisan politics with that. So we've had some good conversations with some potentially strong challengers to him, and that's a high priority for us.
Well, let's talk about the candidates right now that have announced for governor. Are you confident right now that any one of the four that have announced is a good matchup with Inslee?
I do believe we can win with any of the four that are running. I think it's ultimately up to them. As we've talked about, they're getting out there. They're talking to the voters of Washington State. They're getting their message out, whether it's Lauren Culp, Phil Fortunato, Joshua Fried, or Anton Sakharov. They're all campaigning. I've seen them at events. It's up to them to get their message out, to highlight their strengths. And we're going to allow the voters to decide. But whoever comes out of that primary, I'm confident can defeat Governor Inslee, because the voters want a governor who actually wants the job.
Yeah.
He's clearly indicated he doesn't. And as we've seen, there have been many problems in our state that have gotten worse over his eight-year tenure. So I think the voters are ready for a change. And I think I trust the voters that are going to pick wisely in the primary and pick who best represents them. And so I will move on from that, and I firmly believe we can win.
Last question then from you on that part. What's being done from the state level to ensure that, you know, voters will have access to hearing them all on the same debate stage?
In terms of the candidates, yeah, I mean, ultimately, we will see as we move forward. There's going to be many opportunities to get that message out for those candidates, whether it's county conventions, precinct caucuses. I'd love to come back on your show as we get into kind of January, February of 2020 about all these events that are going to be happening in every corner of the state. But then beyond that, we've got our state convention in May of 2020, and we'll look forward to hearing from the candidates then. And we'd love to work with some partners to get something where we can broadcast that message out far and wide, because we have a real story to tell. There's people that are hurting, people that need things to be done differently from our state government, and we have candidates that are promoting solutions, and we want to help them get that message out.
And folks at home who are listening know I tried to get Caleb off the record, just like, okay, who you really want? he's actually open to every single candidate who's running. So I'm actually confident, as I was confident the last time around, that the Washington State GOP, they're not playing favorites here, and they're actually going to let the candidates campaign, which is good for us, because then it means they're going to talk to us. Anton is the only candidate who has not yet come on the show. We've got him on, I believe, this week, so that everyone has the opportunity to hear directly from all the candidates, and we're all about that right here on the show. I've been talking with Caleb Heimlich. He's the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party, WSRP.org, if you want to go there right now and check out the article that they wrote, that the Seattle Times said, oh, no, no, we're not going to be fair. We're not going to give them the opportunity to promote a rebuttal to the ridiculous Danny Westneat story. Caleb, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate everything you're doing to get the word out.
Thanks, man. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. We talked a little bit about the Emmys earlier on in the show, and we talked about some of the political stuff. And for the most part, I actually don't think it was all that political, at least from the highlights that I saw. But there was something that was brought to my attention moments before going on to the air that I think it kind of demands that we talk about. Right? This isn't something that you can sort of tiptoe around. Like, we have to talk about it.
Without a doubt. This is the greatest thing.
Terrence Howard is on Empire, which is an awful show. I kind of liked the first season, and then, oh my God, did it suck. Empire is the show with Jussie Smollett, as Dave Chappelle will say, Jussie Smollett, who was the person who pretended to be attacked in Chicago by those Trump supporters. So Terrence Howard is the main actor on the show. He is known as being very difficult to work with. It is why I'm told, at least according to the rumor blogs, why he was replaced in Iron Man with Don Cheadle.
Great move, by the way.
Very good move. Incredible. Terrence Howard is just, he kind of seems like a pain in the backside. So he did an interview with my friend Sam Rubin from KTLA in Los Angeles. He's the big entertainment reporter there. He's been doing it for a very long time. And I can read Sam very well. I've worked alongside him for a while when I was at the station down in LA long, long, long time ago. He clearly doesn't know what to do with Terrence Howard in this red carpet interview, but I do give him credit because he kind of still, he does something.
He stuck in there, and that was huge.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, everyone keeps trying to tell me, don't say it's forever, but I've spent 37 years pretending to be people so that people can pretend to watch and enjoy what I'm doing when I've made some discoveries in my own personal life with the science that, you know, Pythagoras was searching for. I was able to open up the flower of life properly and find the real wave conjugations that we've been looking for 10,000 years. Why would I continue, you know, walking on water for tips?
So he's saying words. He's saying things. What he's saying, I do not know.
When I've got an entire generation to teach a whole new world. Well, let me put it this way. All energy in the universe is expressed in motion. All motion is expressed in waves. All waves are curved. So where does the straight lines come from to make the platonic solids? There are no straight lines. So when I took the flower of life and opened it properly, I found a whole new wave conjugations that expose the in-between spaces. It's the thing that holds us all together.
So he's either an incredibly intelligent man who's capable of seeing things that the layperson is not, which is certainly an option, or he's tripping on acid.
Here's my thought. He was possessed. The first thing out of his mouth, I did not act for 37 years to blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Dude's only been acting since like 92. His math is way off already.
Is that true? He wasn't a child actor?
92. I'm on
IMDb. You're looking it up?
I'm on IMDb right now.
Okay. So there's a flower and some waves, and there's not a line. That was my takeaway from that. The weird thing I thought about this is that he doesn't look like he's inebriated at all. In fact, he generally has this look of anger in his eyes. He just looks like an angry person all the time, or annoyed when I've seen him do these kinds of interviews, which I totally get because usually the questions are really stupid. He seemed very sort of light and happy, And he actually weirdly did seem like he had his stuff together. But then he mentions that he doesn't believe gravity is an actual thing.
On Tuesday, when I receive my star, I'm going to be able to prove that gravity is only an effect and not a force. Yeah. I'm putting something on YouTube where I will build the planet Saturn without gravity and build the Milky Way galaxy without gravity.
I mean, was he talking literally?
I hope not.
Because he might cause the Earth to collapse on itself.
Look, in the media, Antonio Brown's been saying some stupid stuff in the NFL, and there's some CTE somewhere in there. And what's Terrence Howard's excuse?
I'm telling you, remember that story in, what was it, Walla Walla, where the kids were just dropping acid by accident? They didn't know what happened.
Wapato.
That's close. Here he is asked what he's going to do as the presenter on the Emmys.
I have no idea. I'm just being honest and looking at it. You know, I would think an Emmy nomination would come first.
Yeah, because he's not actually been nominated for an Emmy. So, you know, I wish him all the best in his collapse as a functioning human being. I bear no ill will towards him. The funny thing is, sometimes when you hear some of these interviews from folks, what kind of bothers me is not that I don't understand it, right? And yes, we laugh about it because it's funny and crazy. But part of me also is a little bit in awe that this guy is a success, despite being insane, right? That this guy can speak this kind of gibberish and seem happy, whereas I say things 3 hours a day on this show, countless hours on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram that make total sense, that are brilliant thoughts, that are wise beyond my years, and yet I'm miserable. How is it that I can talk with common sense for 3 hours a day on this show, then turn off my microphone, go home, and cry myself to sleep all alone in my South Lake Union bedroom, miserable? But this guy talks about gravity not existing, waves of flowers and something or other from Jupiter or planet Mars, and he seems happy. Who's doing it right? Who's doing it wrong? I'm just saying. I'm going to go to that guy's school. Sign me up for whatever it is he's taking. Thank you so much for tuning in.